Crime Stories with Nancy Grace.
Breaking news tonight, a sickening stab spree in a local AMC theater matinee. Four girls inside the theater all stabbed by a male perp wearing what was thought to be a flowing, long, platinum blonde wig who was, quote, laughing the whole time. 1 hour later, two stabbed at a nearby McDonald's as another dead body turns up in an apartment building. Good evening. I'm Nancy Grace. This is Crime Stories. Thank you for being with us.
Four young girls head to an AMC in their hometown of Braintree, Massachusetts. It's a Saturday matinee showing of the movie If. The four girls, ages 9 to 17, have the theater all to themselves, but just minutes into the movie, an unknown assailant, a man wearing a trench coat and sporting long blonde hair, approaches in the darkened theater. He walks into the aisle behind the girls and, without saying a word, begins a bloody stabbing spree, knifing all four girls.
My stars. Do you know how many times I've gone to a matinee, especially in the summertime, with the twins, and it'll just be us three and the whole theater joining me, an all-star panel to make sense of what we know right now, including Susan Raff, investigative reporter, WFSB-TV, Connecticut. But first, I need a shrink, to Dr. Gary Brocato, joining us, forensic psychologist, co-creator of the Columbia Mass Murder Database and author of The New Evil, Understanding the Emergence of Modern Violent Crime. Dr. Brocato, thank you for being with us. I have long said, and I have not seen any study, a thesis, a doctoral summary, nothing on the psychopathy behind stabbing versus shooting, or strangulation or any other mode of homicide. But stabbing, in my mind, and I don't know how to verbalize it, doctor, is a whole nother layer of evil. You have to, it's like a sweetheart murder. You're very intimate with your victim. You are violently attacking them and actually witnessing the blood, the life's blood, flow out of their body. So that's a lot different from, say, a sniper shooting at a distance, right, where there's no contact with the victim, or vehicular homicide. It's just a very different psychopathy. And on four little girls trying to watch a matinee.
Did the Columbia Mass Murder Database, one of the things we considered specifically was the method that was used. Now, this attack that occurred across Massachusetts and Connecticut would technically be considered a spree stabbing. It could have become a mass, you know, a spree killing, but there weren't enough people who expired to meet criteria for that. But it certainly was an attempted spree stabbing. One of the things we learned about people who perpetrate these actions is that the choice of weapon is very telling in terms of the psychology of the individual. For example, an individual that uses a firearm, probably because of the accessibility of them, is far less likely to have bona fide serious mental illness. We do have to think about that when you are talking about somebody who picks up something around the house and goes on a spree. But it is interesting because the people who use blades specifically do seem to divide up into people who are very disturbed and people who use them because of a more perverse, fantasy-oriented wish to have an intimacy with the victims. For example, in the Koberger case, there's the use of a blade, and that is technically an accused mass murder. There, I think it was selected more for the intimacy and the pain it would have inflicted. So we have to think about what kind of two types we're dealing with when a blade is used.
Wow. That's a lot for me to take in. Remember, I'm just a trial lawyer. You're the shrink. But I hear you, and your comparisons are amazing, specifically as it goes to Koberger. What happened in this case? Imagine sitting in a darkened matinee, basically by yourself, four little girls, straight out to Susan Raff joining us, investigative reporter, WFSB-TV. Susan, thanks for being with us. Susan, I want you to hear what the mom says. And this is from our friends at Boston 10 WBTSCD.
My oldest was leaned over to get something. He got her in the back and then my other daughter in the top chest. And then my last daughter across her arm, laughing the whole time.
Susan, what happened?
Well, I mean, this is a terrible situation. I mean, you have four young girls in a movie theater. One, I think the youngest was only 9 years old. And it came in the dark. He stabbed those four girls. This was terrifying for a lot of people, and especially the mother of those girls. I think there were only four girls in that movie theater at the time.
What more do we know about the theater stabbing of four little girls? Listen.
When the man with long blonde hair approaches the young girl closest to him, she is bent down in her seat, reaching for something. He stabs her in the back, then stabs the girl next to her in the chest. He slashes the third across her arm and stabs the fourth in an unspecified location. The attacker then runs from the theater. While never uttering a word, he laughs throughout the attack. All four girls sustained serious injuries.
Back to Susan Raff joining us, WFSB TV. Susan, how did the attacker get into the theater unnoticed? Did he pay? Did he sneak in a side door? And how did he make a getaway?
I'm not exactly sure how he was able to get into the theater. Those are all things that we're looking into. How did he get into that theater? How did he get in and manage to get a knife and stab those four young girls? Then obviously he left the theater, but we're all very concerned as to what exactly happened. How did he get into that theater? Did he buy a ticket to that theater? At this point, we really don't know.
Guys, we've been told he did not buy a ticket. So what is the security situation at this theater? How did he just get in? And I don't know if you've noticed, but a lot of theaters have changed their admittance after COVID. Has the admittance to this theater been changed? We know he didn't get a ticket, so how did he end up in a practically isolated theater with four little girls? Still under investigation, but that's not the end of the story. Listen.
A man driving a black Porsche Macan argues with a Plymouth, Massachusetts McDonald's employee, insisting the employee double-check his order. The driver tries to snatch the bag of food without paying, but the 28-year-old male employee refuses to let go. The driver stabs the employee in the arm several times, then parks his car and enters the restaurant. A 21-year-old female employee screams, "Stop, you don't have to do this," as the driver stabs her in the arms as well. A third employee chases the driver back to his car. He laughs and shows the OK symbol before pulling off in the Porsche.
Laughs and shows the OK symbol? Remember, at McDonald's, they are covered in surveillance cameras. That's going to be tough to beat. Eric Faddis joining me, renowned trial lawyer, TV legal analyst, and founding partner of Varner Faddis Elite Legal, former felony prosecutor. Eric, there's no way. Now, a darkened theater, that's one thing. You're not going to get very good video out of that. But the lobby to the theater, if he in fact went through the lobby, and at McDonald's, the drive-thru, the interior, the cash register, they're all covered with surveillance video.
Yeah, no question, Nancy. And I'm sure law enforcement is sort of retracing the steps of the suspect and finding every piece of surveillance video they can. It's my understanding that the vehicle may have been on surveillance video, that the license plate may have been on surveillance video. These are all pieces that law enforcement is going to put together in this gruesome puzzle that happened in Massachusetts and potentially Connecticut.
And another thing, Eric Faddis, our renowned trial lawyer, think about it. How many men are wearing what was first thought to be a long platinum blonde wig? Really? How's he going to use the sod? Some other dude did it defense. How many people are in and out of theaters and McDonald's, men wearing a long, blonde, flowing wig, Eric?
Yeah, it's a distinguishing characteristic, no question. And it's going to be difficult for his defense team to try to argue alternative suspect or something along those lines. We also know that the suspect had a pretty nice car, a Porsche SUV that's black. And so there are all of these factors that prosecution is going to tie directly to this suspect and to no one else.
Guys, in the last days, we discover a man apparently wearing a long flowing blonde wig somehow sneaks into a darkened AMC theater. Only a few little girls, four little girls in this theater for the matinee. They've got the whole place to themselves. Little did they know, waiting in the wings was a guy with a knife. Joining me, Dr. Eric Eason, a board-certified forensic pathologist, consultant. Dr. Eason, thank you for being with us. Dr. Eason, how often, comparatively, do you see stabbing homicides versus bludgeoning, blunt trauma, strangulation or asphyxiation and shootings?
Well, it depends on where you live. I mean, I've worked in Georgia, I've worked in Chicago, and I currently now work in Florida. And, you know, Chicago was the place where we saw a lot of gunshot wound cases. Atlanta actually had quite a few stab wound cases when I was there. As far as bludgeonings, those are pretty rare compared to the other two types. And what was the other one that you mentioned? Bludgeoning, stab wounds.
Asphyxiation.
What do you mean, like asphyxiation, strangulation? I've had a few cases like that too, but those are pretty rare as well. It's very tough to actually strangle an adult male. And so that kind of eliminates half the population right there. It's very, very tough to kill someone, an adult male, by strangulation. So stab wounds probably number two on my list for everywhere that I've worked for homicides.
Crime Stories with Nancy Grace.
Guys, four little girls stabbed in the AMC matinee. But again, that's not the end. Listen.
Plymouth PD uses surveillance footage and witness statements to identify the black Porsche Macan from the drive-thru as registered to Jared Revisa. State police officers spot the Porsche and flip on blue lights, but Revisa takes off, leading to an erratic chase. In the nearby town of Sandwich, Revisa crashes the car, which explodes into flames.
An intense police chase ends in a fiery crash for Revisa's expensive Porsche. Jared Revisa is detained only moments later and now faces multiple counts of assault with intent to murder and battery charges.
But that wasn't the end of his stabbing spree. Who is this guy? Listen.
Jared Revisa is raised by his parents, Jason and Kim Revisa, in Agawam, Massachusetts. Revisa attends classes at the University of Massachusetts for one semester, but quickly abandons further studies to start a digital marketing and social media management agency. Revisa claims his self-named business, Revisa Jones Productions, has offices in Manhattan, Beverly Hills, Paris, and Naples. Revisa describes himself as an artist, professional model, skier, and social entrepreneur.
Okay, I'm always suspicious when someone just says they're an entrepreneur. Of what? Who is this guy? Apparently, he's had a very, very privileged past, as friends and former co-workers weigh in on who he is. To Susan Raft, WFSB-TV, who is he?
Well, he, I understand, grew up in Martha's Vineyard. He was living there. He does come from a life of privilege. I mean, to drive a Porsche SUV like that, he clearly comes from money. He was renting a house in Deep River, Connecticut, for about 2 months. So that can't be inexpensive. It's a very expensive home. He was renting a home in Deep River for 2 months. His social media accounts are very, you can see for yourself. He was experimenting with a lot of things. And he definitely comes from money.
From what I can glean regarding his background, he is a former UMass, University of Massachusetts student who claims to run, and I'm quoting, a leading global digital marketing and social media management agency. That's a mouthful. What's he doing on the beach if he's running a global digital marketing and social media management agency? Okay, he claims he's got offices in Manhattan, Beverly Hills, Paris, and Naples. Talk about a con man. Joining me, forensic psychologist who was the co-creator of the Columbia Mass Murder Database, Dr. Gary Brocato. Dr. Brocato, in some cases, I would classify this as swagger, i.e. lies. But this is over the top, Dr. Brocato, a leading global digital marketing and social media management agency with offices in Manhattan, Beverly Hills, Paris, and Naples. He's a BSer.
Right. Well, when we created the database, one of the things we learned about people whatever mechanism it is they use to attempt a mass murder or to commit one, is that there tends to be, as a general rule with these individuals, a precipitating event that is like the match that goes to the straw that sets them off. But underlying that moment, you have a kind of a person with a personality where identity is very, very murky. They're very angry and they're very lost in the world. And what people like that tend to do is toy with their identity. We know, for example, that before the offense, this individual began to wonder, for example, about his gender identity and began identifying as a she. He took on the personality of somebody that worked out constantly and became muscular and got very close to his father from the time of COVID, almost like obsessed with doing that. He clearly was obsessed with the socioeconomic status of the family and feeling valid within that. And I think the ultimate proof of it and the precipitating event comes in April, as we're seeing today in the papers, when he inveigles himself, like he did into the movie theater, into a photo shoot of a model and basically tells her that he's going to marry her and have her children and terrifies her. And is rebuffed by him. And this story is very classic for the kind of people that go out and do these things, because you have a person who's trying to look physically very beautiful and attractive and is rejected. And then, of course, who is it that's targeted in the attack? Young, cute kid, females that he might have experienced a kind of envy toward. You have a person who's beginning to identify as female and is preoccupied with physical beauty and youth. And so what I think you have is an expression of anger that exploded in a person whose whole identity was wrapped up around those things.
Well, while he claims to run a leading global digital marketing and social media management agency in Manhattan, Beverly Hills, Paris, and Naples, his friends from his former college say they remember him as simply being odd. They claim he only went to school for a semester, then disappeared. He claimed to be a social media influencer back then in college, but according to college friends or associates, they thought that was a joke, that he was considered just to be odd. Back to Susan Raft, WFSB. I understand he lived on an island home, which was the home to politicians and celebrities for years. And I assume that the reports are referring to Martha's Vineyard.
That's correct. He was living on Martha's Vineyard. I think he's from Martha's Vineyard. But most recently, I believe he was living in Agawam, Massachusetts, which is outside of Springfield.
The stabbing spree at the AMC Theater, followed by a stabbing spree at a local McDonald's, was not the end of the story. But I'm curious about the McDonald's spree. Back to Susan Raft. What, if anything, tipped off? What was the genesis of the McDonald's stabbing? Because there was no genesis at the AMC. What about the McDonald's? Did they get the order wrong or what?
I don't think so. I spoke actually with one of the employees who was stabbed, a female who worked there. First, it's believed that he drove to the drive-thru. He got upset about an order, but he lunged through the drive-thru window and stabbed a male employee at that McDonald's several times, then parked his Porsche and went inside the McDonald's and stabbed a female employee several times in the arms. The employee that I spoke to who works at that McDonald's said she was terrified and now she's afraid to go to work. She doesn't really know what to do and she can't use her arms right now because they're all bandaged. So why he just suddenly, went off like that inside the McDonald's, we just don't know. We just don't know. But he obviously scared those poor employees who were working that day, and they probably won't come back to work.
What more do we know about this guy? Listen.
In early 2020, Jared Revisa disappears entirely from social media. When Revisa returns to Instagram 2 years later, he's nearly unrecognizable. Revisa, who usually wears an all-American look, now sports a dark spray tan and long bleached hair. Revisa changes his pronouns on Instagram to she, her, and his legal name to Jared Love Jones. Most of his posts are now selfies, photos of his artwork, and fitness videos.
Okay, I'm getting a pretty good picture of who he is, and he's reminding me of somebody else. He's reminding me of a guy named Sam Haskell. Does the name Sam Haskell ring a bell to anybody? Haskell was the son of a famous Hollywood agent. And when I mean, when I say famous, I mean represented Dolly Parton, Whoopi Goldberg, so many others. And he had a spoiled brat kid that turned into a spoiled brat man. Listen.
Sam Haskell IV is the 35-year-old son of Sam Haskell III, an Emmy Award-winning producer. Haskell IV lists himself as a director and posted several clips online of low-budget videos he wrote and filmed. Former Real Housewives of Beverly Hills star Brandi Glanville appears in one of the clips for a movie which appears to be a high school teen drama. Sam Haskell IV lives in a six-bedroom home in Tarzana with his wife, May Lee Haskell, their three young sons, and May Lee's parents, Gashan Lee, 72, and 64-year-old Yang Zhai Wang. Authorities say May and both of her parents are missing.
Like, my resume says unhappy, bitter, resentful, and like really good at ordering off the menu.
Brat. He's talking about ordering off the menu. His wife and in-laws, who lived with him and his wife to raise the children since he was so absentee, they're dead. May's torso has been found in a dumpster. They're not missing. And both the parents were murdered. Their bodies haven't been found. This is a guy who was given everything on a silver platter on top of a Christmas tree. All that money, a $3 million home, a wife who was paying the mortgage for him, beautiful children now believed to have been at home when Mom May was murdered. Given everything, but still turns into a killer. That's Sam Haskell. I don't know if it's the tan, the workout regimen, the long blonde hair, or just being a grown brat. I got to have a shrink. But first, to Eric Faddis, high-profile trial lawyer, former prosecutor, a guy like this sitting in front of a jury will set every juror's teeth on edge, because most of us had to work and have responsibilities that we have to uphold. Okay? But when you see somebody like this guy, the AMC stabber, stabbing little girls in a matinee, then going on to employees at a McDonald's, all of them either weaker or less cunning or less money than he has. That's who he's picking on, Eric Faddis. I just hope he comes into a jury deliberations, at the point of jury deliberations, having sat with this attitude in front of a jury the whole trial.
Yeah, Nancy, it's very cringeworthy to just hear these people talk. And you know, they don't come from adversity or struggle or some sort of understandably difficult circumstance. They come from privilege. They were given, look, he's got a picture of him with the Porsche in which he allegedly committed these crimes. And so I think it could be infuriating for a jury to be exposed to someone who's this entitled, this spoiled, this cavalier about the gravity of these serious stabbing allegations.
Raviza goes on stabbing spree. Roommate and dog later found dead. Raviza allegedly stabbed four girls, ages 9 through 17, Saturday evening at an AMC theater in Massachusetts. Raviza allegedly finished off his spree at a McDonald's Rest Plaza, where he publicly urinated at the drive-thru before stabbing two employees and fleeing.
Did I hear her say he publicly urinated at the drive-thru? Susan Raff, did I hear that?
Absolutely did. He did. He urinated at that McDonald's.
I worked at a restaurant in law school, and there was a drive-thru. It's a sandwich shop. I can only imagine what McDonald's workers go through every day. But to see this guy pull out his p*** and urinate, I think that's way above and beyond the call of the job. I mean, you know what it tells me? Susan Raff, guys, Susan Raff is an investigative reporter at WFSB. She has seen every sort of crime that comes along. But you know what I hate? I mean, I hate all crime, violent crime. But someone that is so disdainful of other people that it's okay for him to whip out his and urinate in front of the McDonald's employees. You know, a lot of them are just kids, really, you know, in their teens, getting a job, and they've got to see that, number one. Of course, that takes a backseat to a mass stabbing. But that said, this guy, has been given everything, his whole life. And who does he pick on? Children in a matinee and the people working at a McDonald's for minimum wage. That is who he literally pisses on. And of course, we don't allow the P word in our house. But that's what this guy did. Who does he think he is? And don't tune up with me, Bricado, that he is legally insane. If he were legally insane, he would not have run from the scene. He knew what he did was wrong. And that is the legal test, the litmus test, the only test in the United States. It's the old McNaughton rule, as I've said before, brought over to our country from the Brits, our common law. If you know right from wrong at the time of the incident, you are not insane at the time of the incident. He got in his car and took off. He led police on a wild chase. He knew what he did was wrong. He takes advantage of people that are weaker, less powerful, and less cunning than he is. And he, I guarantee you, has gotten away with it for his whole life.
Well, Nancy, it's very interesting because the suspect's father happens to be a mental health professional with about 35 years of experience. And the father has told the press that he believed that his son had some kind of mental breakdown, I think was the phrase. I think what I'm seeing evidence of, and of course I haven't examined him, but what I'm seeing evidence of in what's available publicly is a kind of rageful, inadequate personality that under stress and a sense of envy and anger exploded and certainly would be described as a peculiar person.
Wait, you're going so fast. I can't take it all in. Did you say he's got stress? What stress? He doesn't have to work. His daddy gave him a Porsche. He's living at a, quote, holiday home, which means vacation rental that he's had for weeks. You heard Susan Raff. I've never known her to be wrong on a fact so far, okay? Maybe I've missed something. But he's been bunking out at Martha's Vineyard and various other vacation spots. What stress?
Well, it's very interesting because, like a lot of people who commit these offenses, he might have everything in the world, but what he's missing, probably, is a kind of social acceptance and beauty, which he might feel are essential, things that money can't buy, really. And I think that if you look at the offenses that are laid out, the order of them is very telling. The arc of them is very telling. Because I think what you had was an expression of envy towards these attractive, you know, perhaps cute young kids that are in the theater, having a family together, having positive time together.
You're telling me a grown man driving a Porsche with anything he wants is envious of what? How young was the youngest one, Susan? Nine? A nine-year-old little girl that he stabbed?
9 years old.
I'm sorry, Bricado. I'm not buying any of what you're saying. They may hire you for the defense. Jealous?
I think that when you compare what occurred in the theater to what happened in the McDonald's is a very clear attempt to use privilege to compensate for the insecurity by going to a place where you might associate people with lower SES, you urinate, you drive in with your Porsche, the whole thing. So I think what you see there is the whole arc of what this guy's personality is about. You compensate for the inadequacy shown in the first part of the crime by using your privilege and so forth to condescend to people. And I think that's the whole idea, is that at the center of this individual is a sense of being weird, odd, rejected, not good enough, no matter how much he compensated. And I think that's the stress that lit the fuse, the rejection by the model. Who knows what went on in the dynamic with the father?
Wait. Mm-hmm. Okay, you know you're going to have to crystallize that. Mm-hmm. And consolidate that if you're speaking to a jury, because I'm making notes as fast as I can. I've got one note, insecurity. Eric Faddis, trial lawyer, can I talk to you about insecurity and everything that Dr. Gary Bricado just said? I'm not saying he's wrong, but if you try that on a jury, that this guy who obviously comes from a wealthy family and is rolling in money is insecure, that's not going to work. Well, I mean, he's caught on video, Faddis. What do you do with that? He's driving a Porsche. How many Porsches have you seen today? I've seen zero Porsches. It's him. There's no question that it's him. He's driving the same Porsche when he leads cops on a high-speed chase and, of course, crashes the Porsche. Don't worry, Daddy will probably pay for that. Another thing, the father, and I really do not blame parents for the sins of their children, but on the father's website at Cross Point Clinical, it says Revisa Senior helps, quote, unlock each person's full potential as a human being. What does that mean? Okay, call me old school, but my parents gave me one word of advice. Either you go get a really good education or you can live on this red dirt road the rest of your life. Not in those exact words, but unlock each person's full potential as a human being. I'm not blaming the father, but I'm telling you something. As a defense lawyer, you better come up with something and quick, Fattis.
Yeah, Nancy, you know, it's an eerie statement in light of what happened. But what we've got to remember is that, you know, everyone's a human being and everyone's experienced trauma. And that trauma affects different people in different ways, especially if they are predisposed to react in a certain way.
Everybody experiences trauma. You mean like the four little girls that got stabbed in the theater and the McDonald's workers? And I'm not even through. I got another dead body to get to. Fattis?
That's extreme trauma, no question. But what we're talking about from a legal standpoint is how this came to be. What was going on inside of this person that resulted in these heinous acts? And was it simply that he's a BSer?
Why are you saying this? What's going on deep inside of him? Who cares? Unless he's legally insane. Don't care. Don't think me harsh. I care more about the four little girls. I tell you what, somebody comes in and tries to assault my daughter in a darkened theater, all hell's gonna break loose, Fattis. And you're talking to me about his feelings on the inside? To hell with his feelings on the inside. What are you saying?
So Nancy, and that could be the initial impression of the jury, the same as you. But what we've got to look into is whether he knew right from wrong. And when you look at some of his statements to police, allegedly, you know, he says that he founded this country with John Adams. That right there raises eyebrows as to whether this dude really knew what reality was or not.
Crime Stories with Nancy Grace.
Guys, joining me is Susan Raff, WFSB-TV, and she has been dying to tell us, and she's right. We're not even done with the body count here. There's another stabbing victim. Listen.
Connecticut police confirmed 70-year-old Bruce Feldman of West Hartford was found dead Saturday in a Deep River Holiday home. Feldman's family devastated by the news of his sudden death. Feldman's longtime love, Julie Feldman of West Hartford, in tears, stating, "The whole thing's really shocking. We were together a very, very long time."
Okay, I've got to figure out who is the next victim. Susan, who is this guy?
Who is this guy? This is Bruce Feldman. He was 70 years old. We are told that he was recently divorced. He didn't have a lot going on. We're not quite sure what the relationship was with the suspect, but they were staying at that home in Deep River. Now, Bruce Feldman, they had two dogs there. One was a poodle and another large dog. And Bruce used to walk the dog in that neighborhood. They had been renting the home for probably about 2 weeks. A lot of the neighbors say that he didn't have the dogs on the leash, that they were walking around. He had some kind of altercation where he sat on someone's property, Bruce Feldman. And that may have sparked some tension. And it's believed that the suspect then went to that house, took a shovel, and smashed the window. And that's why police went to that neighborhood, because of the complaint from the woman who lived on the street.
Okay, wait, this is getting very convoluted. Hold on. So we think suspect smashed a neighbor's window. In that neighborhood, he was bunked up with the now dead Feldman. So cops show up on the smashed window. Then they find a dead body. You were saying something about the two dogs?
Right. He had two dogs, and we believe that those dogs were also killed inside that home.
Let me understand something. So we've got the victim, 70-year-old Feldman, Bruce Feldman, and he had allowed suspect to live with him. He allowed him to move in. And now he's found dead, let me guess, stabbed to death. And the two dogs are killed as well. Feldman's two dogs were murdered.
Right. And what's really interesting about this is that the neighbors say they saw Bruce Feldman all the time in that neighborhood, walking the poodle that you see in that photo around the neighborhood, but they never saw the suspect. They only saw Bruce Feldman. At one point, a neighbor said, you know, we don't even believe that there's someone else there. But they did see the Porsche there. So, and that was very critical for police in this investigation. That Porsche that you're looking at was parked in the driveway of that home and was also the car that was in Massachusetts. But Bruce Feldman was seen as a very social guy, very friendly with the neighbors. He tried to have a play date with one of the neighbors' dogs. But for some reason, something happened in that house. And when police got there, I believe that they found Bruce Feldman's body outside and he was dead.
Oh, my goodness. So you think the mode of death on Bruce Feldman was also stabbing?
I don't know if he was stabbed or he might have been killed with a shovel. The investigation hasn't released the cause of death. He may have been killed with a shovel. And then at that point, he obviously left the scene.
I want to think this through. And this is how I'd argue it to a jury once I finally got to what it's not necessarily chronological, but we're discussing Feldman last because he was found dead last along with his pet dogs. I would definitely argue to a jury, Faddis, joining me, Eric Faddis, trial lawyer and TV legal analyst. Think about it. Think about picking up a shovel. I mean, when you see a pet dog, what is your natural instinct? Mine is to try to pet it and baby talk to it and love on it.
Me too.
Think about picking up a shovel and swinging it with such force. The act of beating someone dead with a shovel and then killing the two dogs? Did he cut them across the throat with a shovel? Did he bludgeon them dead with a shovel? That's what happened to Feldman and his two dogs. I submit at the hands of this guy.
Well, you know, I hear you, Nancy, but the defense perspective is this guy some heartless killer or is he completely off his rocker? Think about it. Why kill the dogs? If he has some beef with Feldman, why take the additional step to kill two innocent dogs? You know, that could be evidence, in fact, that he didn't know right from wrong and he was just acting like a crazy person in there.
Why did he run, Faddis? If he didn't know right from wrong, why did he run? He ran from the movie theater. He took off and ran from the McDonald's. He, in fact, led police on a high-speed chase. He reminds me of another spoiled brat killer. Listen.
The attorney for New York City's sidewalk shover, Lauren Pazienza, claims the spoiled socialite was a drunk and high mess the night she allegedly pushed legendary Broadway singing coach Barbara Gustern, causing the 87-year-old to fall and later die from her injuries. Pazienza is facing charges of manslaughter and assault for the unprovoked attack on Gustern. After Pazienza allegedly shoved her, the 87-year-old legend fell and hit her head. She died 5 days later from those injuries.
That defendant, the so-called cesspool princess, her dad was a millionaire, is a multimillionaire from building cesspools for rich people, gets drunk and shoves a little old lady who then dies and then ran off and deleted all of her social media, tried to hide out, tried to delete everything on her phone. She knew darn well what she had done, and Miss Gustern died. And let me remind everybody of Heather Mack, another spoiled brat.
I don't regret killing my mother. And as evil as that may sound, that's my reality. In my heart, in my mind, my soul, in my blood, and the oxygen running through my body, but I wanted to kill my mother.
Sheila Von Wies Mack takes her spoiled 19-year-old daughter Heather Mack to Bali for a luxury vacation to repair their mom-daughter relationship and put distance between Heather and her 21-year-old boyfriend Tommy Schaefer. Heather has different plans, uses mom's money to sneak Tommy to Bali, where they kill Sheila Mack, fold her body in a suitcase, and take a taxi to a cheap hotel. Leaving the hotel, they forget the luggage, and hotel security opens it up to find Sheila Von Wies Mack. Ethan Couch was just 16 when he killed four people and wounded nine others while he was drunk, on drugs, and speeding. His attorney said it was his parents' fault for never telling the boy no, never having any consequences for his actions. It was called affluenza, and the judge bought it. Couch is sentenced to an unspecified rehab facility at his parents' expense. The time he had to stay, also unspecified, for killing four people. And he still didn't follow the rules.
Guys, in the last hours, we are learning more about a suspect who eludes police capture, taking them on a wild goose chase, a high-speed pursuit, after stabbing four little girls in an AMC theater, stabbing McDonald's employees not far away, and now suspected in the stabbing death of his roommate and the roommate's two dogs, Bruce Feldman. I'm not sure that we really even know all of his victims. What is even more shocking is that he's from an affluent family and has been given everything on a silver platter. Susan Raff, WFSB, you were in court. What did you see?
He appeared in court. He was evaluated by a forensic psychologist for about 2 hours, and we waited for that. Then they came back, and now he is at Bridgewater Hospital in Massachusetts, where he's going to be for the next 20 days. This forensic psychologist said, yes, he does seem to understand some things. You're pointing out he knows right from wrong. He understood the process in the court, but she called him delusional, that he is somewhat psychotic, that he thinks his parents are involved in the mafia, that he believes he's being controlled by outside forces. So it appears that he does suffer from a lot of mental health issues. It was brought out by that same psychologist that for the past 2 years he's been suffering from that. So in the end, in June 17th, when he goes
back. Wait a minute. Hold on, Susan Raff.
Go ahead.
He has delusions of grandeur. He may be histrionic. That is not going to rise to the level of insanity. So what exactly happened in court?
Well, I think they have to determine that. The judge wants to see in the next 20 days he's being evaluated if he's able to work with his attorney to defend himself. So whatever they decide, that will determine what goes forward, whether he does go to trial or not. And that's very telling.
To Eric Faddis joining us. Eric, there's a far cry between having a delusion of grandeur or being histrionic or spinning yarns about yourself or your family, which, you know, you heard Dr. Brocato talking about a model that had just turned down advances and a proposal by the suspect. That's not going to rise to legal insanity. Now, he could fake some sort of a delusion to be titled incompetent to stand trial at this time, which doesn't mean you were insane at the time of the act. It means you're not fit to help your lawyer try the case. And what they do is put you in a mental facility and give you the right therapy and medication until you are fit to stand trial. The murder of Bruce Feldman, the dogs, the stabbings of four little girls, and the McDonald's employees, that's a crime spree. There has got to be justice, Faddis.
Certainly, and that's what the community is calling for, and that's obviously a reasonable position to take. But, you know, in looking at it, his attorneys raised competency. There's been at least one court practitioner, a doctor, who has said that he has very serious delusions. And so I think there are some real questions as to whether this is someone with mental illness who's just a really good manipulator and who is homicidal, or if it's someone who is so detached from reality that they cannot stand trial to face these charges and cannot be convicted of them.
To Dr. Gary Brocato, clinical forensic psychologist, author of The New Evil, Understanding the Emergence of Modern Violent Crime, Where do you stand on this? I certainly do not want someone who is insane to go into GP general population, but I don't think he was insane at the time of the stabbings.
Well, first of all, the crossover between psychotic illness and violence has been a specialty throughout my career. And I will tell you that part of the trouble is that people think that psychotic disorders are like a light switch. You know, it's on or it's off. You have it or you don't. The truth is there's a wide array of traits that can be psychotic, signs and symptoms that can be psychotic. And you can have an individual with that kind of core, but who knows precisely what he's doing and is motivated by ordinary human feelings and anger and so forth. But the core of the individual could still be peculiar, whatever. But it's not a justification because the individual's specific motivation is not voices or something like that. It's something else, like being angry after an argument or feeling slighted or so forth. So that it doesn't become so much a defense as much as a kind of mitigating factor, perhaps, that you might want to take into consideration when understanding the breadth of the offense and why it was so random and chaotic and so forth. But the original impetus, I'm not sure, was psychotic in nature based on what I'm hearing. And the other thing is, you're right, Nancy, there were steps taken that indicate a kind of concealment and a fleeing that you wouldn't really see in a person that didn't know what he was doing. I mean, going in the trench coat, for example, into the theater, going into a darkened place where people wouldn't know that they were about to be attacked, running from authorities, so forth. There are signs there of somebody who knows the difference between right and wrong. And I think that is ultimately all anybody is going to care about. Legally.
We wait as justice unfolds, and as we wait, we stop to remember an American hero, Sergeant Heather Glenn. Sergeant Glenn, shot and killed in the line of duty, Till City, Indiana, survived by broken-hearted parents Bob and Jane, her brother Jason, and nephew Trace. American hero, Sergeant Heather Glenn. Thank you to all of our guests coming together to make sense of what we know in this case. But I thank you especially to you for being with us tonight and every night. Nancy Grace signing off. Good night, friend.